Welcome to today's Association of the United States Army Special Edition Thought Leader Podcast on Army Installation Strategy. This is Colonel Retired Dan Roper, AUSA's Director of National Security Studies. I'll be serving as your co-host today, along with my colleague, AUSA's Program Manager for Family Programs, Ms. Thea Green. To address this subject, we're fortunate to be joined by the senior official performing the duties of the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, Mr. Jack Suresh. In this capacity, Mr. Suresh serves as a primary advisor to the Secretary of the Army and the Chief of Staff of the Army on all matters related to Army installation policy and oversight and coordination of energy security and management. He has a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering from the University of Rochester and a Master's in Engineering and Energy Management from Texas A&M. Since 2005, he's served in senior executive service in positions of progressively increasing responsibility in the National Nuclear Security Administration, the Department of Energy, and the Department of the Army. Mr. Suresh, welcome to Thought Leaders.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
We're happy here too, and we're looking forward to your commentary. I recently read your article in Army Magazine and thought it was excellent and timely, given all the other changes that are going on in the Army today. I've also read the Army Installation Strategy published on the ASA IE&E website. I got to tell you, it sounds ambitious. There's a lot in that strategy. And as I understand it, this is the first time the Army's done this, or at least to this order of magnitude. But there are a number of factors that drove the Army in this direction. Could you describe for our listeners what drove you to publish the Army Installation Strategy now, and what was the impetus?
Absolutely. I just want to start off by saying that we really appreciate your interest in the Army Installation Strategy. And as I'm talking, I may refer to it as the AIS, but again, Army Installation Strategy. So we recognize that our world continues to evolve at a rapid pace and has changed a lot in just the last few years. If you look at the National Defense Strategy, you'll note that it states that the homeland is no longer a sanctuary. So the AIS recognizes the Army's need to build resilience now to protect against a wide range of threats, cyber attacks, disinformation campaigns, climate change, and many other threats. The new interim security strategic guidance has a large focus on climate change. So that's an area we're looking especially hard at right now to stay in step with the administration's priorities. The AIS describes how installations will modernize to support the multi-domain operations ready force over the next 15 plus years. As multi-domain operations is the Army's new warfighting construct, and this refers to not just air, land, and sea domains, but space and cyberspace domains, installations are now part of the battle space. They are our platforms for training and deployment, and they must be ready to support Army missions and be resilient to disruption. The AIS informs how Army installations will adapt existing infrastructure, systems, and services to protect installations from the new threats, as well as mitigate threats from the natural environment characterized by the effects of climate change and environmental degradation, just to name two items. Finally, technology is changing, and that, of course, can be both an advantage and a disadvantage to us. We want to be ready for the new threats while taking advantage of technologies that can help us be more efficient and effective.
That is a pretty ambitious scope to tackle in this strategy, and I suspect that our listeners might not fully understand how big that is, not just how challenging it is, but how big it is. And I think virtually every state and U.S. territory is touched by this, as well as the troops that we have stationed abroad. So could you describe what's the order of magnitude of Army facilities at home and abroad, and what does the Army installations strategy help do to prepare them?
I will certainly give it a try. So the Army has 136 installations worldwide, and this includes 48 Army National Guard installations and 3 Army Reserve installations. In addition, there are separate recruiting centers, standalone facilities, and structures at home as well as overseas. The Army manages and operates almost 1 billion square feet of buildings around the world, and this is spread out over almost 14 million acres of land and training areas. We have 26,000 miles of road and 76 airfields and helipads. If I try to make this equivalent to something that you could picture, the Army occupies land about the size of West Virginia or about the size of 2 Marylands. So we're really big. And when you think about it, the sun really never sets on the U.S. Army. We have installations and contingency bases around the world. We support a population of over 3.6 million soldiers, civilians, families, retirees, and their families. So the Army installation strategy covers all of our facilities and installations that are enduring. And because the Army is primarily based in the continental United States, we have a focus on the strategic support area. And this is the area from which forces deploy, and this includes the homeland.
Thank you. That does give you a much better appreciation for, as you said, the global footprint and the magnitude of what the Army has got and what you've got to help maintain. Now, to talk a little bit about the people that are on those installations, I'd like to turn it over to Thea Green to ask you a few questions related to communities and families. Over to you, Thea.
Thank you, Dan. Good morning, Mr. Suresh. It's my pleasure to speak with you today. I have two questions for you. So we understand Army leadership has defined people as our soldiers, families, civilians, and retirees, as the Army's number one priority. How does people priority mesh with the strategy that primarily addresses infrastructure and facility?
Thea, thank you very much. So our people live, work, train on, and deploy from installations. And as you mentioned, the Army's leadership motto is people first. A number of construction and service efforts are underway now and will continue into the decade to improve quality of life for soldiers and their families. These projects include upgrades in military housing, barracks, internet connectivity, service provision, child development centers, and gymnasiums. These efforts are ongoing now on many installations, and we have many more planned in the upcoming years. And I'd like to give you just one example that involves privatized housing. Recently, the Army approved terms negotiated with Lendlease, a company that has partnered with the Army to operate housing on multiple Army installations, for almost $1.1 billion in capital investment. This is investment of private sector funding, and it will allow Lendlease to accelerate their previously planned sustainment program at Army installations by more than 10 years. Lendlease owns and operates military housing across a national portfolio, and that includes over 26,000 Army homes and is one of the Army's seven major private housing partners. Obtaining this additional private sector investment will accelerate significant improvements to almost 12,000 existing homes located at Fort Hood, Fort Campbell, Fort Knox, Fort Wainwright, Fort Drum, and Army housing out in Oahu. The additional investment will also enable the construction of over 1,200 new homes on Fort Hood, Fort Campbell, Fort Knox, and Fort Wainwright. A significant portion of the total investment will be given to Fort Hood. And as I think everyone knows, Fort Hood is one of the Army's largest installations. This additional investment will go a long way to improving the quality of homes for soldiers and their families. At the same time, we're following Army guidance on strategic readiness and modernization priorities to ensure installations are ready for mobilization and deployment missions with the right capabilities for training the force.
Thank you for sharing that. I just had a podcast with Mrs. D. Guys on Quality of Life Initiative, so just sharing more information on that is great. I really appreciate that. The Army installation leadership and the soldiers, families, and the civilians that are living or working on installations interface often with their local communities and local industries. Now, are there opportunities here for partnership with local communities or industries in advancement of the strategy?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of opportunity. You know, the Army has a longstanding relationship with industry and, of course, our community partners. Industry partners are piloting new technologies on installations to test new capabilities, to improve services, and create efficiencies. We have partnerships with energy and water providers to improve resilience, upgrade system efficiency, and provide alternative sources of energy. As just one example, in the spring of 2019, we co-sponsored an industry day with the Army Corps of Engineers, where we brought in industry, installation funding decision makers, and executors from the Army Material Command and the reserve components together to understand the capabilities industry is developing and how those capabilities can make installations more resilient, efficient, and effective.
Thanks for those excellent questions, Thea. Mr. Suresh, if we could talk a little bit more about technology. You mentioned this as being a motivator in the timing of the strategy. And from the strategy itself, technology is indicated as both an opportunity and a potential threat. So with a rapid pace of technological change in areas like artificial intelligence, machine learning, drone technology, and miniaturization, what do you see as most important areas to tackle with respect to installation modernization, and how will they potentially impact operations?
That's a great question. There's certainly a lot of new and emerging technology out there, and this causes us to have to prioritize our efforts to ensure we are tackling the most critical issues. Frankly, the entire Army is prioritizing data analytics and visualization to ensure leaders can see the status of projects and programs and make holistic, informed decisions. That same type of technology is critical for installations as well. This year, the Army built its facility investment plan using data-driven models to maximize returns to facility condition and readiness. The Army Material Command advanced that capability with a tool that helps visualize potential decisions on where to invest to get the most of our funding in improving facility conditions. Data-informed visual dashboards and artificial intelligence capabilities will help us make the best choices to be both efficient and effective in stewardship of funds. The Army has another promising tool called VTIME, or Virtual Testbed for Installation Management Effectiveness. This tool is under development and designed to incorporate artificial intelligence to automate some of these statuses across installations and to expand the areas of analysis and visualization. We have a pilot ongoing at Fort Benning called the Installation Operations Tool, which incorporates VTIME into an ongoing effort aimed to aggregate sensor information into a common picture of the installation status. It has already identified utility usage recommendations to save funds during periods of low occupancy. It will eventually provide sensor-to-data links to help emergency services personnel monitor conditions on the installation in the case of emerging threats. We hope this tool will prove itself both helpful to installation operators and cost-effective in terms of its return on investment so we can evaluate scalability across the Army. We also have a number of other pilots and efforts in progress or are planning to roll out over the next several years, such as AI-enhanced screening of vehicles and installation entry points, video monitoring at child development centers, automated sensors to meter utilities provision, and unmanned shuttle services. Another example, we ran an unmanned shuttle recently in a pilot at Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall. The vehicle's name was Ollie. The pilot was successful and was one of 10 installations within the Army to earn the 2020 Army Community Partnership Award. And this recognized the collaborative innovation to improve installation quality of life, build stronger community relationships, and enhance Army readiness and modernization.
Another theme in the strategy is resilience, and it refers to installations as platforms of capabilities and an end state that envisions what you frame as constellations of installations. Can you describe for our listeners what do you mean by that in this context, and where is the Army hoping to take installations moving forward?
I'll give it a try. That's a great question. As I stated, we are investing in our data modeling capabilities to allow us to model how investments contribute to installation readiness, efficiencies, and effectiveness. Resilience refers to the ability of the installation to ensure the operation of critical systems that can't risk being affected by an unplanned disruption. One such area is in installation energy and water resilience. We must have secure access to energy and water on our installations in order to maintain critical operations and support of the Army mission and its people. One way to achieve this assurance is to be able to maintain awareness through the common operating picture and provide as feasible capabilities across installation platforms during temporary disruptions or loss of capability. As each installation represents a platform of capabilities, the constellation of installations connected through the shared visibility status that I described a moment ago can ensure situational awareness and assistance as feasible from installations not affected by disruptions. Additionally, smart infrastructure like microgrids will enable energy distribution to be limited or shared within an installation, providing dynamic emergency response options and energy efficiency opportunities. The constellation maintains both Army-made situational awareness and helps commanders and decision makers act on that common operating picture to address evolving situations that affect their mission in near real time as the situation is evolving.
With so much infrastructure, as you described earlier on in the podcast, and a modernizing Army where virtually everything's changing, it sounds like it might take the Army a while to achieve the end state described in the strategy of modernized, resilient, and sustainable installations. So what are the first steps? What's going on right now? And how long will it take to get to the end state envisioned in the strategy?
So let me start with the last question first. We have stated the AIS is a 15-year strategy. It provides an azimuth of the direction from which we want to take installations over the next 15 plus years. That said, the evolving environment, you know, threats, technology, and funding will make some of our priorities move faster and others may take us longer. But this is important. Installations provide critical capabilities to Army strategic readiness, and installations need to be capable and ready when called to action. So we're moving as quickly as possible to put the framework in place to advance the end state in the strategy. What's happening now is that the stakeholders across the Army are looking at the AIS from their positions in terms of how we advance to make the vision a reality. Within the Army staff, the G9, the Deputy Chief of Staff for Installations, is running a planning effort to develop an implementation plan for the strategy. The result of this effort will be a plan with specific tasks and objectives, metrics to measure and gauge success, timeliness, and the identification of organizations responsible for each of the actions. Additionally, we will establish a rhythm and a governance forum to review the status of the objectives over time. We're a little over 3 months into the development of the implementation plan, which will look out probably 2 to 5 years at a time. We'll then, of course, update the plan as conditions change. As a point of reference, we also actively monitor the progress of the Army's People Strategy's implementation plan. The People Strategy was published about 15 months before the AIS. That effort is giving us a good model to follow. The first implementation plan for the People Strategy was published about a year after the strategy. As we are just a few months into the development, we still have a ways to go, but we're making great progress. Implementation of the strategy will be an Army-wide effort and key to achieving the end state.
You've certainly covered the landscape with what's going on in Army installations. It's got to be much deeper than most people would think on the surface, and that's very impressive. Is there any final thoughts you have for our listeners on what you'd like them to know or understand about the strategy or where they can learn more about that?
Again, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the Army installation strategy. There are a couple of takeaways I'd like to leave your listeners with. First, through the Army installation strategy, we are promoting a new mindset about installations, and that is that installations are key strategic readiness enablers for the Army, critical to ensuring the Army can deploy, fight, and win the nation's wars. So the bottom line is installations are now part of the war fight. Frankly, this is a culture change. It's going to force us to look at installations through a new lens. With our Army primarily based in the U.S. now, installations are all the more important for their ability to support mobilization deployment and to be able to sustain the force. Next, as the Army is modernizing its force, installations must also modernize to support our people and sustain our forces. Technology is changing so fast, our ranges, our training centers, and deployment capabilities must be ready to support new weapon systems and doctrine, and they must be resilient to withstand the new technologies that adversaries or the extreme weather or climate change may throw at us. Finally, we want to ensure our people know that they are the glue that keeps the Army rolling along. We must put improvements to infrastructure and services that support people first. Thank you very much.
Thea, would you like to share your parting observations?
Yes, I just want to say, Mr. Siraj, it has been a pleasure speaking with you. I appreciate you sharing even more on the quality of life initiatives. And like you said, the Army has put people first, and you're right. They're the glue to keep the Army rolling along. So again, thank you so much, and it has been a pleasure speaking with you.
I'd like to echo thanks that Thea just expressed to Mr. Jack Siraj, the senior official performing the duties of the Assistant Secretary of the Army, Installations, Energy, and Environment, being with us today and sharing your insights on something that touches every part of the Army, not just its weapon systems and its training, but it's the soldiers, families, and the communities that support it. We look forward to following the progress and the implementation of the strategy as the Army transforms itself to a 21st century MDO-ready force. Thank you very much.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.